You're listening to IAM Pulse, a podcast discussing all things identity access management, from defending against cyber attacks and to enhancing your overall cybersecurity strategy. This podcast is brought to you by BioKey International, an innovative provider of flexible, secure access management and biometric identity solutions. We're sitting down to talk about the impact of identity access management makes on you and your business. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of IAM Pulse. I am your host, William Papa, and today I'm joined by Kim Johnson, VP of Product at BioKey, and one of your usual hosts on the show. Today, she's actually joining us to talk about biometrics, how they aren't all created equal, and highlight a different way to authenticate. Welcome to the show, Kim, and how does it feel to be on the other side of the table this week?
It's been a while, Will. I've done plenty of these podcasts. Usually I get to be in your seat, so excited to be here, though, and excited to be on this side.
Yeah, admittedly, it's weird being on this side instead of in the editing room. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Different kind of environment. But besides the point, let's get the show started. So today we're talking about biometrics and the evolution of multi-factor authentication. So the problem is, as you put it oftentimes, that traditional MFA is failing us. Authentication is about answering the question, are you who you say you are? And so I wanted to ask you, Kim, what are the problems with traditional MFA? Like, how are they failing us?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's funny, right? I've been at this over a decade now and seen multi-factor, what actually started as two-factor authentication back in the day, evolve over the years. When it first came out, they actually, some of the financial institutions that first had to require it, put in things like a username, password, and knowledge question. Right. And then very quickly, the regulations changed to say, well, that's not actually two-factor, that's still both something that you know. Right. So, you know, we've seen it evolve over the years. We've seen different tactics come and go. And I think the main thing with traditional MFA, as we call it, things like one-time passwords, hardware tokens, you know, SMS, OTPs. There's a couple ways that I'd say they're quote unquote failing us. First of all, they're inconvenient. Right. I don't know about you, but we've talked about this, right? Where the OTP panic mode, right? I watch the clock tick down as I try to enter in my OTP and find it fast enough. But they're cumbersome. They interrupt customers and employees on day-to-day tasks. It's hard to register some of these things. You have to constantly find and dig for your hardware token at the bottom of your purse, if you're me.
Right.
You know, it's not convenient. And I think, you know, we've looked at it too. There was a study out there from New York Times that basically said it's an average of 25 minutes to return to a task after somebody's disrupted.
Yeah, 100%.
You know. Yeah. So if you think about, I'm trying to gain access, especially a customer, I'm trying to gain access to like my online banking application. Now I'm disrupted. I'm not remembering what I'm doing. I'm trying to find something, especially passwords. It's not a convenient thing. The other point I'll make on this is that they're vulnerable to attack. So a lot of the reasons things have evolved over the years is because it's, you know, hackers, it's their day-to-day job to make sure they can break in and break down the security barriers that we put up. Passwords by far still are the weakest link. You know, the Verizon Data Investigations breach report, 81% of the breaches are still from stolen or weak passwords. And then the crazy thing is the traditional, the more widely adopted one-time passcodes that I'd say maybe 5-6 years ago and even up to today are probably the main use, you know, are mainly used for authentication. Now we're seeing those intercepted. So, you know, you've covered it as well on some of our posts, but $16 is all it took for a hacker to gain control of all SMS messages to this one individual's phone and start sending her pictures of her WhatsApp and I believe Tinder account, which would be pretty
scary. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's part of that. And then honestly, they can be shared between people. So, as much as we're all about, you know, moving to zero trust and knowing who you say you are, as you pointed out, organizations are really trusting, okay, well, the hardware token's present or the mobile phone is present. They still don't really know that the person is present who's trying to gain access. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I 100% agree. I've had cases where, you know, I've had some friends use like some of my accounts and like Google, for example, requires sometimes an OTP if you're using like a third party app like Photoshop or any Adobe product. And they would text me saying, hey, what's your what's the 6-digit OTP? And I'd have to text them. But then, you know, it's weird because like I'm just giving that information out. And then but that time limit that you mentioned, too, with it, it's that it is pretty short compared to, you know, it's not timeless.
Right.
And so like by the time that like in instances where you get a text, it might be too late, maybe because of a server related issue, don't have enough service. So I'll be waiting 5 minutes to receive one text. And by that time I type it in, it says, oh, we sent you a new one. And then, you know, it keeps repeating. It's that endless cycle. So yeah, I see a lot of these issues with traditional MFA, and it sucks right now because, that's the main thing that people are using today too. It's like one OTP is like run a lot of the traditional MFA that we see everywhere, on common apps that a lot of people have. So moving on. So like, what about biometrics, right? Isn't that a good alternative to the methods that you just mentioned?
Yeah. So that's a great question, right? Good news for BioKey and other providers of biometrics is finally they are becoming more widely adopted. If you look back to when, you know, Apple introduced biometrics as methods on the iPhone, that really started to kick it off for us as users to say, okay, I'm fine touching something or putting my fingerprint or using my facial recognition to log in. But the part that's kind of troublesome is they're not all created equal. Right. So something like a user controlled device based biometric, as we call it, which are some of these phone based methods, they're something that can be delegated by the owner of the device. So you mentioned, you know, your fellow, you know, your friends and things. And obviously you were just in school recently. There's nothing stopping you from enrolling somebody else's fingerprint on your phone and allowing that to then gain access to things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So the enterprise that originally said, okay, Will, you're going to be the one logging in and this is Will's fingerprint. When it's stored on the device like that, it really doesn't have, it relinquishes the control, I guess, for the enterprise. So you can delegate it to somebody else. You can enroll somebody else. So there's been a lot of challenges there with, yes, it's convenient, but are you using the most, the biometric with the highest level of integrity? In terms of binding it to the identity. The other thing we've seen too is that there's an accuracy issue. So things like the phone-based methods are about 1 in 50,000 or 1 in 1 million. The solution we'll talk about in just a little bit is 1 in 20 million. It's not even close to as accurate. So again, trying to answer this problem that everybody's trying to answer is, are you who you say you are? All biometrics aren't created equal. We're getting closer because it is something you are, right, to log in, but it's something that is a challenge. And then the last piece I'd say about that too is it's only available on that device. So if I use, let's say, my iPhone to gain access to my banking application, and then I'm on a different device altogether, I don't have access to that fingerprint anymore. It's stored on the device I used to have. For example, I could go through either re-enrollment or find a different way to authenticate. So it's good that biometrics are being adopted, but we do have to be careful that they are not all created equal. So, and then from there, I'd say what we're seeing and what we're really going after is what's called identity-bound biometrics. And that really looks to be the solution in the better category of biometrics that enterprises should be looking for that are still just as convenient.
Oh, okay. I see. So identity-bound biometrics, right? Mm-hmm. Again, it goes along the lines of confirming who you say you are. So Kim, when you bring up identity-bound biometrics, or as we term it, IBB, as this new category compared to general biometrics, you know, when I first heard it, I know certainly a lot of people, when it was introduced to them, they're going to, IBB will make people ask, what is that? So can you expand on identity-bound biometrics as it's new to a lot of our listeners and users in the landscape?
Yeah, sure. And that was part of the intention, right? Is we want people asking kind of, what is that? Right. You know, if you look out there, a lot of other providers are like, we give biometrics. It's like, right, but what kind? And I think it's important to start asking that question. So first of all, biometrics, confidentiality, secrecy with biometrics is really not the concern. A lot of people get hung up on that, right? Like, oh, if you see my fingerprint or steal it, you can use it, or my face. If that was the case, then everybody's face in a Facebook photo would be hacked, right? So in terms of biometrics, what you need to look for are really four different things. So it's integrity, availability, security, and accuracy. When it comes to identity-bound biometrics, it really gives you the highest levels of all four of those. So for integrity, which is probably the most important, we kind of touched upon this before, right? Is the binding of the biometric to the identity permanently. So that once somebody has enrolled, let's say their fingerprint or their palm scan or their voice, that digital identity is bound now to that biometric, and that user is the only one that can use it to access their account. So you, for example, can't then enroll your friend's fingerprint to access the same thing. Definitely something that's not stored on the device, and something that you can actually check in a more centralized way to say, okay, is this the same fingerprint that we originally delegated to that digital identity? That's extremely important for enterprise level security in all ways. The availability part, right? As I said, it's from any device. So if it's a user controlled device based biometric, the fingerprint scanner, for example, is on my iPhone. It is always on my iPhone. And it is where the biometric lives and breathes. That means that when I get a different device or try to use a different device, that is not an option for me anymore. In other words, the biometric isn't going to be available on other devices, whereas identity-bound biometrics, it is. Security, this goes for biometrics overall. You can't forget them. You can't have them phished, stolen, forged. Like I said, a lot of people are like, oh, well, if I took a picture of your fingerprint, it doesn't work that way, right? It's not, first of all, it's templates, it's encrypted. You're not going to be able to just take a picture of a fingerprint, hold it up to something, or put it on a scanner and get in. The other piece of this is we offer liveness detection so that you actually have to have a living hand or fingerprint on the other side of it. You know, I always joke about there's all these movies out there with crazy scenes of eyeballs and fingers and things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Demolition Man, one of my favorite movies. But that's just not how this technology works. You can't make a fake, you know, or a fake palm. You can't, you know, have something that isn't alive on the other side. So there's a lot there that's built in to make sure it's as secure as possible. And then accuracy, I think we talked about that, right? So Something like a palm scan is 400 times more accurate than any device-based biometric. And again, that really matters when I'm trying to make sure, Will, you are who you say you are.
Right. So. Yeah, wanted to, especially the security part too. I know that's for us, it's been one of our biggest our highlight of our messaging is that you can't really forget biometrics. You know, like You can't forget your fingerprint, you know, and Then on the off chance your like hand is cut off or something, I think that's one of the very rare cases. But at that point, you have a bigger issue than, you know, authentication, right? Again, also, like, I think this helps really go into, I think when you mentioned the movies, I was thinking about spy-related movies, how Someone was holding, like, a wine glass, and then they got a piece of tape, taped it over, like, someone's, like, fingerprint on the wine glass, and then used that to log in. And that's not true to reality. You know, again, Instead you need a liveness factor, and it's been tested and tested again. You really need to have an actual fingerprint that makes it, you know, yours, and it has to be an actual finger, not just some fake piece of tape or a fake mold or whatever.
And it's good for Hollywood, right? I think That's the other point I'd point out is that's a great movie scene. It makes for a good thing. If a hacker is really trying to get into something or breach something or an enterprise or whatever it may be, they're not going to go after the biometric templates.
Exactly.
You know, they're going to go after the backend systems or servers or things that are vulnerable. I think it's really important to point out, we've seen some major hacks and attacks coming out in the news, and they've increased, you know, by X percentage, I forget the percentage right now, but over last year, the pandemic, you don't see biometrics as the cause. And there's a reason for that. They're not going to go to the extent of taking someone, kidnapping that, you know, again, makes for a great Tom Cruise movie, maybe, but it doesn't mean that that's how hackers are going about it. The barrier to entry for a hacker to get into what's the most common authentication method, I'd say SMS OTPs, so minimal. And I can tell you in that article, it was crazy because like starting to receive pictures of your account, not from you, is pretty scary. And that's a bad day. That's probably worth a lot more than $16 to the person that has stolen. But yeah, no, that's a good question. So from mobile auth and from palm scanning from a mobile device, because it doesn't require any other hardware device, it's, again, something that's camera-equipped mobile phone or, you know, laptop, et cetera. It's a great solution for customer IAM or customer identity and access management. So we see things like banking, online banking, right? So, Will, I'm sure you have a banking app or a banking account online, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, some banks now you don't even have a branch to go into. Some of the other ones. And so this is an excellent way to authenticate you as an online banking customer. So this is something the bank would actually enforce for you as their customer to log in. And then we've seen it also with students. So students, seen some cases where I'm sure you never did this, although, you know, I call it out. But the exams, you know, how do you prove that Will is the person taking your final exam?
Right. Yeah.
You know, making sure that's true and that you really are who you say you are, especially in that case, and it determines you graduating and your grade, you know, is very important to be accurate. And again, that high level of integrity. So,
oh, yeah. No, I want to reiterate on that student related issue. I'm a recent graduate. So believe me, during the pandemic, with a lot of professors not requiring webcams to be on during an exam and or exams could be asynchronous. A lot of students can just, you know, there could be three students in one room, you know, all doing the exam at the same time, you know, cheating off each other. It's a very common thing that happens, especially with the pandemic. And you know, a lot of students really didn't like care and it wasn't in person anymore. And with the online banking, admittedly, I rarely go to, you know, my bank branch, like in person. I just use the mobile app when I can. Transitioning away from like using like cash in hand, just going into everything digital, it makes it a lot easier just to go into online banking using things like biometrics. I know from the past I used like Touch ID and that was available, and now Face ID. And now with palm scanning, it definitely would be a bigger step to security wise. And also I think a lot easier now than Face ID.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great point. And so the other thing that we've seen is remote access. Right. If anything, the pandemic did was move everybody to remote.
Right.
And now we're seeing, as you've probably seen the news too, this isn't going away. Right. I saw a recent article. Some people are willing to actually take pay cuts to be able to stay remote.
Right.
You know, just because it's they've gotten used to it. It's more convenient. But that's a bigger challenge where, OK, how do you prove somebody is who they say they are if they're not in the building? Mm-hmm. And important functions like HR or other admin accounts, even those are things that you want to make sure you can really know the person is who they are when they're logging in.
Yeah, 100% agree. I've read the article about that too, actually. It's surprising, right? That like, you know, 30,000, like I think someone was offered $30,000 to go in the office and they rejected the offer just to just to stay at home. Definitely a commute related issue too. What we've learned from remote access recently, especially with the start of the pandemic back in March 2020, is that hackers now have a lot of gateway entries too to you know, basically access, you know, employees, like compromised data. So you have,
it was a field day for hackers. It was a field day. I mean, can you imagine hackers sitting there going, wait, everybody's going to be online from their own home networks that they don't secure? Field day. Like they had, it's probably like Christmas.
Right. It's like, the three pig story with the big bad wolf. It's like, instead of, you know, one big brick house, it's 20 like straw houses,
You know, got it's just it.
Like,
you got it.
Yep, and it's really important too. Yeah. Especially with like, you know, everyone being remote too. It's like, you really can't tell again, who is someone who they say they are. You could have one of my friends could have came into this meeting instead of me. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't know until we started recording that was them. So that's a very big thing. And that's a very big thing in terms of remote access overall. You know, it's not just like certain scenarios like these. This is a very big thing that it's going to be, and as you said, a thing for a very long time.
Right.
Even then, up to forever. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say, and then the other thing that's, you know, kind of going along the use cases too, that's a field day for hackers, is like passwords, right? The thing that amazes me is we still talk about passwords. We still talk about having passwords. We survey companies and they still are using them constantly. When people went remote, that was a field day, as we said, for hackers, because anybody using a password was very vulnerable. And so now, you know, we're seeing constantly this idea of passwordless and removing passwords and eliminating passwords. Now, there's a whole probably podcast we could do on passwordless and whether or not that's achievable and when and everything else. But the main way to do passwordless and start removing that very vulnerable and probably weakest link in security is through having something that you are, which is biometric.
Oh yeah, that's definitely going to be a very, very long time. People rely on passwords. Yeah. And it's one of those it's an unnecessary evil. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, unnecessary evil, sorry. Because everyone's going to still use them. There's this story I had where, a previous coworker of mine wasn't really securing their passwords. It was, one of the simplest passwords out there. You know, anyone could have guessed it.
Right.
And there's this, feature on newer browsers, basically, like Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Firefox. Basically, when you store your password on there, easier access, right? Passwords already in, sign in. It said that all their passwords are compromised online. People are able to find them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a big shock. It was a big, it's like a big shock to know, all my passwords are online. But, you know, when you really take a step back, it's like, well, it's because I didn't really do anything with it.
Right.
And eventually, whether it was a difficult password or an easy one, eventually hackers will get to the point where harder passwords become the easier ones. You know, mm-hmm. no matter how many random characters, asterisks, exclamation points you add, it's just going to make the process. It's just you're delaying the inevitable, right?
Yeah.
It's going passwordless right now is such a very big thing.
Yeah, it's. I saw a recent video. It was on social media actually, where they were saying, "Oh, what's your password?" And the person's like, "Well, it's my daughter's birthday and the name of my pet," right? And so they start having a conversation with the person and they're like, "Oh, so what's your daughter's name? When was she born? Oh, okay. Do you have any dogs or cats or whatever? What's their name?" And within about 2 minutes, they had combined enough to get the password.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny to listen to how we remember them, what we use to remember them, is publicly available information.
Yeah.
And then there's a report that comes out every year of the top passwords that are used. And inevitably password 1234 pound or whatever is always the same password that's top of mind. Yeah. So I think there's, you know, I'm hoping passwordless will solve that. I think there's been a lot of push in the industry, but biometrics is a way to get to that passwordless state, but make sure again that you pick the type of biometric that gives the highest level of that integrity that's important.
Right, exactly.
And then I think, you know, use case wise, the last one I'd highlight is zero trust. So talk about another buzzword, another topic that's become, you know, extremely hot in the industry, is zero trust and implementing what's called a zero trust architecture. And so that's all about, you don't, you know, never trust, always verify type of mentality,
mm-hmm.
that there's no perimeter, right? We always used to put the castle in the middle and the moat around in security. No concept of that whatsoever, even more so now that we're all remote. And it requires 100% of multi-factor authentication 100% of the time and on a continuous basis. Well, you and I know if it goes back to that inconvenience issue of not being adopted by users and being inconvenient and hard to do, then A, users ourselves will find a workaround, and B, we won't adopt it. So getting to that 100% is going to be next to impossible, right? It's very hard to get adoption of multi-factor if it's difficult to use. And then talk about zero trust. How do you trust OTP? How do you trust just a hardware token? You better off knowing for sure the person is who they say they are, and that you're actually trusting the individual versus, let's say, a device or a one-time passcode. So, yeah, and the last thing I'll say about that is if you look at the executive order, right, that Biden just signed for cybersecurity and bought out for federal, guess what? It mandates zero trust. So anybody that wasn't bought into it or not, you know, thinking about it, you better believe it's coming.
Yeah.
It's definitely the way for security. So anyway, that's, again, most of these topics we could talk about for a whole podcast.
But we'll 100%. Yeah. Especially passwordless. That's we have a field day with those topics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One of my favorites.
All right. Thank you, Kim, and for the overview on why traditional MFA is failing us. And now there is a different way to authenticate. As mentioned, visit BioKey's website, www.bio-key.com, and learn more, especially on the multi-factor authentication page. And that concludes this episode of IAM Pulse. Thank you for listening to the show. Again, if you want more information or to listen to our other episodes, go to bio-key.com or check out the other episodes talking about more news in IAM. Talk to you guys soon.